Hello, welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. Very contentious list. We'll be getting into the contention content of that list today. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing well. I'm here in my formal attire. I have my little paper crown on and my box full of power tools.
Very nice. I have a Metallica t-shirt and one condom.
Everything you need.
Yes.
Yes.
Today we are talking about a film that is ranked at number 8.
Number 8.
On our infamous Rotten Tomatoes list. It is a movie called The Loved Ones from 2009. And if you're asking yourself, number 8, how have I never heard and or seen this movie? Well, only 52 critics have seen or heard of this. But that's not to say I'm giving it shit, but no. It's me giving the list shit more than anything else.
Yes.
It has a 98% Rotten Tomatoes score out of only 58 reviews. And a 73% audience score. That's a fairly big swing.
Yep.
Had you seen it before?
No, had not seen it, had not heard of it, knew absolutely nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I knew of it, had not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It had been one that was on the list for a long, like my personal list, but clearly not the number 8 spot, because I would have gotten to it before now.
Did you know it was Australian?
I did not, actually.
I did not either.
Even going into the movie last night, I thought maybe it was the wrong movie, because for some reason I thought it was Canadian.
Oh.
But then the movie told me 5 to 7 times in different ways that it's Australian.
Yeah.
Every company with Australia in the name apparently put money into this movie.
Proudly Australian.
Speaking of putting money into things, if you'd like to follow Amanda and I as we tackle the horror movie sequels this year on Patreon, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. January was Gremlins 2. February was Dracula Has Risen from the Grave. March was, we just did this the other day, and it's already out of my brain. It is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which just went up. April will be Final Destination 2, and we'll be doing Final Destination 2 shortly on our main list. Sorry, we'll be doing Final Destination 1
yes.
on our main show.
Which comes before 2.
Sometimes, generally.
In the Final Destination franchise.
You know, when I was younger, when I was getting into these movies, I had just seen Evil Dead 2, I think.
Mm.
And my art teacher at the time said, you know, there is no Evil Dead 1. Like, that's like the joke. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? He was wrong.
Yeah, he was lying to you.
I do understand, I think, why he said, never mind. If you want to go listen to our coverage of the Evil Dead franchise
We've
we did last year.
A anyway, bunch of them.
We are going to play the trailer for you for The Loved Ones, and we'll be right back to talk about it.
Will you go to the dance with me?
I'm going with Holly. Guess who asked me to the dance?
Tell me. Who is she?
I'll never tell.
Love hurts.
Pretty as a picture.
What are you looking at? Bring the hammer, Daddy.
This year's queen of the dance is Lola Stone.
There he is.
Love is like a flame, burns you
boils your brains and turns you into one of them.
Say happy.
Happy.
Okay, The Loved Ones from 2009, written and directed by Sean Byrne, starring, I don't know if it's Xavier or I'm going to say it's Xavier. He doesn't really seem too ethnic to me. Xavier Samuel, who is actually someone this is actually a movie full of people I've never seen before, but have seen in many things, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I looked this kid up, Xavier Samuel. He's been in like four or five things I've seen. Hmm. He plays Scotty Moore, the guitar player in Elvis's band in the Elvis movie, which I was just watching yesterday. So
there you go.
Yeah. So he gets around.
Good for him.
Specifically in Australia.
Yeah.
Robin McLeavy, John Brumpton, Richard Wilson, Victoria Thane, Jessica McNamee, Susie Daugherty, and Fred Whitlock. Amanda. Mm. What happens in The Loved Ones?
After a classmate declines her invitation to the school dance, a teenager kidnaps him and makes him the guest of honor at her own twisted prom.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it's a pretty good summary.
That's half the movie.
I mean, the other half is two teens in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, some things you'll find in The Loved Ones include...
Mm-hmm.
The old unrequited I love you.
Yeah. I mean, he was going through a lot.
Yeah. You know? It's not that he didn't feel it. It's just that he couldn't say it.
Yeah, she seems great.
Yeah, Holly, the girlfriend. Yeah, she seems real sweet. Yeah. Maybe they'll work it out.
I think.
Yes.
They won't, because he died shortly after the end of this movie. He went into shock.
From sepsis, yeah.
Got sepsis and died.
You'll also find free soloing in Chuck's.
Yes, or grief soloing.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Did they only put that in there to set up him climbing out of the hole at the end? It's not a one-to-one.
I think it's also like, I think there's a couple reasons they put that in there, right? It's like, it's very dangerous. He's clearly disregarding his own safety.
Yes.
By climbing this pretty sheer cliff in just Chucks with no safety gear and no one around to help him if he needs it.
Like Tom Cruise, yeah.
Yeah. He has the moment where he sort of leans back, like it looks like he might let himself go.
Mm-hmm.
It's to show like he's remote and he's also disregarding his own safety because of his depression.
If only he had been listening to I Disappear by Metallica. From the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack.
To match his t-shirt.
Which is in the music video, they do it on top of the mountain. Mesa.
Ah.
That Tom Cruise climbs at the beginning of... What I'm saying is, he listens to Metallica.
He should know this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you will also find dog assault. That is assault on a dog.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one in this, this movie.
If the dog had gotten its revenge, I would have been able to say dog assault or dog assault.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it was human on dog violence.
I don't know if I've ever seen... I feel like pet violence usually goes one of two ways. Either the pet is immediately dead or pulls through at the end. I don't think I've ever seen a pet get injured in a movie and then you actually watch it die.
I think there are some.
Well,
top of mind, I Am Legend.
Oh, that's the CGI dog. That doesn't count.
But
that dog dies?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think he has to kill it.
Well, now I understand why he shot all those vampires.
Yeah, there you go. You'll also find Doll Orgy.
Doll Orgy.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't seem like she's got much of a social life, so I get it.
She's just processing and learning via dolls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does this really say about the Australian education system?
Not good things.
Not great.
No. You'll also find vocal cord paralysis.
I identified with
that. Yeah. Suddenly you found your emotional in to understanding this character.
Yes. Never have I identified with a movie so much as when that young boy got bleach injected into his throat.
Now you know what happened to you.
If only he had taken some Prilosec, yeah. Which apparently is what cleared my voice up. Because all I eat is hot sauce.
Ghost peppers.
Yeah. I put hot sauce on ghost peppers and then down it with another glass of hot sauce.
Perfect. The horrors of scrapbooking.
Yeah. It was a nice book, though.
I mean, she's clearly invested.
Yeah, it was
her arts and crafts.
It was like if Lisa Frank did the opening titles for Seven.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
She's still doing stuff. She's still around.
Lisa Frank.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right into the podcast. Let us know if Lisa Frank is still alive doing stuff, or if you yourself are Lisa Frank.
That would be amazing.
I hope Lisa Frank's a listener.
Lisa Frank, if you're listening, just want to say, I love your work. You'll also find, and I quote Clay on this, some teenage Dahmer shit.
Yes.
That is how you expressed yourself to me.
It was. When you said that to me before we started, I was like, is that a quote from the movie?
Nope.
That's a quote from me, baby.
You finally made it.
Yes.
You made it into the things you'll find. You will find knife and foot disease.
Yes. Funny joke from me.
A secret cellar full of feral boys.
Yes, basement boys.
Basement boys.
Looking, I mean, honestly.
Why does that sound like an EDM group? Yeah.
The basement boys. Well, there's another great band name coming up. But,
man.
There must be something in the, if not the educational system, the water and or food in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you mean the hose, water, and the roadkill you throw down to your basement boys?
Yeah, because everybody who went through horrible shit really still holding it together.
Yeah.
Like those basement boys, they've been there for multiple years.
Yeah.
And they're still kicking.
Yep.
That's pretty much all they're doing.
Matricide.
Matricide.
Matricide on a mattress.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite Simpsons jokes. Well, it's not matricide, but when Homer's trying to call the police to report a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, please press the number that corresponds with the crime you are calling in to report. Mm-hmm. And it's what the fat Homer episode, so his hand is too fat.
Mm-hmm.
So he squishes the keys.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes, you have chosen regicide. If you know the name of the king or queen being murdered, please press 7.
You'll also find Corpse Ladder.
Great brand name.
It's also a great band name.
Also, one of those rare moments where I said, I really hope they do X, and then they did it, more or less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Close enough. Corpse Ladder. Always
Corpse
good.
Corpse Ladder, yeah. You will find incestuous parenting, a.k.a. the worst type of parenting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not to...
Oh, boy.
Not to go to bat for the dad here, but...
Oh, God, here we go.
I would say...
For those of you who listen to our Patreon
you don't need
coverage,
to tell them... What we talked about on Patreon, which I very thoroughly caveated before we got into. I'm just saying. It seemed to me that the real problem here was Princess, because she was the one who was doing the incesting.
Lola.
Yeah.
You think Lola was the problem?
She specifically got butt ass naked in front of her dad. Like she's doing it to provoke him, and then when they kiss.
You should let this one go.
I'm just saying what I saw. I'm saying what I saw. When they're going to kiss, she's the one going in for the kiss.
You think he doesn't have incestuous thoughts towards his daughter?
I don't know. He seems to be trying to. I mean,
he doesn't seem to be trying to.
I'm just saying it seems to be a very consensual relationship.
That doesn't make it not incest between an adult parent who raised a child. Clay.
Listen, I've been reading the Epstein
files. You gotta let this bit go.
Anyway.
And last but not least, you will find off-duty cop plot.
Yes. Which, once again,
yes,
ends up being pointless.
Yep.
But we will get into that in a minute. So, we are talking about The Loved Ones. My first question. Why does Australia love horrible grief in their horror movies? This is from 2009.
Yeah.
But this, I feel like this has a lot of the, lays a lot of seeds for stuff like Bring Her Back.
I was going to, the Filippo brothers.
Yeah,
you can really see the
talk
lineage.
To me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that, but it seems weird that specifically these Australian movies are just like steeped in. Is Babadook Australian too?
Yes.
What is going on down there?
They must have very hard lives.
Is it the is the spiders, right?
It must be the spiders, but none of them are about spiders.
Metaphor.
Metaphor for spiders?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess there's just some real real intense emotions happening in Australia.
Yes.
That they need to use their horror movies to help them process.
What was your how did you feel about this? What did you think?
I went into this very ready to be real mad about it because of its placement on the list and because it was so obscure, and I was just mad. I was just like, this should not be number 8 on the list. Fuck this movie. And then we watched it and I begrudgingly liked it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people who have vocal opinions on the internet that loved this movie.
Yeah, this is one that
has
when,
a very
you find the people who like it, the people who like it love it.
Yeah, and I think it was way better done than I expected it to be. I still think it's kind of, you know, when I read that this was this director's first feature film,
I believe. So, yeah.
I was sort of like, yeah, I see that. That makes sense. But for a first film, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I agree. It feels to me like this is a little hard to describe unless you like have really kind of seen a bunch of these, but it feels like a festival movie where it's like humble brag. When I went to Sundance, the one year that I went to the Sundance Film Festival, you would see you'd see these movies that were like 85% there.
Yeah.
Like there was one movie, I think the only like horror movie that we saw was called The Perfect Host. And with David Hyde Pierce. And it's about like this guy, Niles from Frasier, sort of playing an inversion of Niles from Frasier, who this person ends up at his house and he's like a psychopath and yada, 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 dinner party. and like it was, all that stuff was good, but then it was like 15 minutes too long, and there was like a subplot that didn't really work. So there's like a core of a good idea there that probably needed to be refined a little bit more, or at least like feels kind of like they couldn't totally flesh it out to a full movie.
Right.
And this is a really strange version of that because it kind of feels like that.
Yep.
it's got that sort of like... you're going to see a movie sight unseen at a festival and you get this sort of like gonzo, sort of tongue in cheek, torture porny kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's really two movies kind of fighting each other because you've got all of the stuff with the kid who gets kidnapped.
Yes.
And then you've got this entire second subplot, which is about his friend. And his friend getting a date for the prom.
Yep.
And then him going on the date with the girl.
Yep.
And she's fucked up and he's kind of fucked up. And then, you know, and then all of that, the entirety of the subplot.
Yeah.
Only pays off in that at the very end, you find out that this girl's missing brother is one of the people who have been previously abducted by this family of psychopaths.
Yes.
And from that point on, never touched on again.
Right. Because the movie's almost over by that point. Yeah.
And then to make it even worse, she says to her, she's crying and she says to her dad, who is the cop, off duty cop, how come you never found him? And then maybe 5 minutes later, that cop gets a machete through the head.
Yeah.
So she doesn't really come out on top.
Right. Right.
But it's just this weird, like, it's kind of. This gonzo Texas Chainsaw for the millennial generation kind of thing on one side, and this sort of meditation on grief and loss on the other side.
Yeah.
And they never really meet.
Yeah.
Even in the way that it all wraps up, like the main characters who I can't remember what his name is.
Brent.
Brent, of course. Like his journey through the events of the movie don't really give him any catharsis for the death of his father, I think, except for the fact that he makes the same driving error at the end of the movie, but it's for good instead of evil.
I will argue with you on that one.
Okay.
I do think it provides catharsis for the death of his father.
Okay.
And I think it also kind of, by the end, I think we're supposed to get the message that Brent has like rediscovered a will to live.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's going to be rough.
I mean, it's going to be rough, but yeah. I think he's going to make it. He was driving that car pretty well at the end there.
With knife holes in his feet.
With knife holes in his feet. Still working the pedals. Good job. Because the whole setup of the movie is that at the very beginning of the movie, the first scene is Brent is getting a driving lesson from his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's driving down the road, they are kind of giving each other like, you know, family trash talk kind of stuff and ribbing each other a little bit. And he gets distracted talking to his dad. And then there is a young, bloodied, gaunt man in the road that when Brent swerves to miss hitting him with the car, he smashes the car into a tree, presumably then killing his dad.
Yep.
And then the rest of the movie goes from there. Mm-hmm. It jumps forward like 6 months.
6 months,
I think.
Yeah.
And then in the course of the movie, well, after he's been kidnapped by Lola and her dad and is getting tortured at a nightmare prom, he discovers via said scrapbook that we mentioned earlier that this young man that made him crash his car was one of Lola's
basement boys. Yeah.
Yes. So by that transitive property of torture, it's really Lola's fault.
Right.
That his dad dies.
Yeah.
Because if Lola had never tortured and lost a basement boy, there would have been nothing for him to swerve around.
Right.
Killing his father.
Right.
So he gets to kill her with a car.
Yeah. Great. Right. Yeah, I really like
that. That's pretty eye for an eye.
That's
true.
Yeah.
And then we have the whole free soloing on the cliff in his chucks and kind of the temptation. And he cuts himself. He has that razor blade on a necklace. He's clearly like blaming himself very much for his dad's death and toying with the idea of killing himself.
Yeah.
Before the action of the movie. And then by the end, he has done absolutely everything he can to stay alive.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's supposed to sort of be somewhat cathartic at the end there. Like,
He
gets home with his girlfriend. He gets to hug his mom.
Hug his open wound of a chest.
Oh, God, that must have hurt so bad.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think for me, maybe the only differences that I would have liked is that I feel like he never... The switch never gets flipped with him, where if when he gets abducted initially, if there was less if there's more of like a what's the word I'm looking for, acceptance of the like fine, just fucking kill me kind of thing, and then he kind of like it, because I can't do words. Like at the end of Dawn of the Dead, when the guy who's left, Peter's the other one. Anyway,
he's
going to shoot himself and then he's like, no, I'm going to live. And then he goes and they get in the helicopter and fly away.
Yeah.
I don't need anything, I guess, maybe that dramatic, but.
Yeah, I think one.
It's a little tough because he doesn't talk through the rest of the
movie. I was just going to say, I think one of the difficult things is that they have this sort of, I think, unrealistic but clever mechanism of Lola and her dad injecting like bleach or cleaning solution or something into his vocal cords so that he doesn't have the ability to talk or scream anymore, really. He just kind of makes a horrible little shrieking noise.
Very similar to the sound that the people make in Motel Hell. Have you ever seen Motel Hell?
No.
Oh, baby. Great movie.
Sounds great. While that is a neat little way of packaging why no one has heard these basement boys getting tortured pre-basement, it really removes the ability to connect as well with Brent. I think what they're kind of trying to do throughout his torture is show that he is so damaged by his dad's death and haunted by his grief. And he believes he deserves to hurt.
Yeah.
He believes he deserves this. But it makes it so that he doesn't break down the way that Lola wants him to.
Mm.
Like, there's all these moments where she kind of talks about the other boys, or she even kind of commands him to cry.
Right.
And he won't cry. And I think there's a moment in there where we're supposed to feel like it's gone from this sort of numb acceptance that he deserves pain into a no, fuck you, I won't cry.
Sure.
But it's really hard to see where that line is supposed to be because he can't speak.
Mm.
And so it makes it more difficult to see that. Like, because I do think there is that turn in there for him at some point where, like, I think it's when the drill happens is when he finally is really like, I'm not going to let this happen to me.
All the other stuff, I'm going to let that slide because I was in a rough place.
Kind of.
Drill through the forehead.
Right? Like, I mean, he does. He tries to escape that. And I think his first attempt at escape, and then they very easily recapture him. And I think there is that sort of like moment of hopelessness of like, you know what? Fuck it. I deserve this. I killed my dad. They'll kill me. Maybe that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when things keep getting more extreme and more crazy and they keep pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, we're supposed to feel at some point in there like he has kind of developed this core of like, I'm not going to give in and I'm going to fight back. But again, it's really hard to tell when he can't say anything. He can't even say like, fuck you.
Right.
So
right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this from the point of view of like, this is, it's kind of about as distilled down to a torture porn type thing as you can get. Cause it's literally someone who can do nothing but sit there and scream getting tortured for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's gruesome. It's intense, but like I found that the, environment and the characters were kind of goofy enough that it's not as like the first thing that I found myself thinking as I was watching it, as they get into that whole sort of faux dinner sequence and everything, is I was like, wow, this is really brightly lit. Like all the lights
are
colorful. On.
Colorful. Yeah. Yeah.
Because in my head, anytime you see something like this where it's like, I've tied you to a chair. Now I'm going to put a drill through your forehead. It's like Seven. Right?
Yeah,
like all the lights are off. The walls look like they're literally dying.
Yeah, everything's yellow and green.
Yeah, every covered in phlegm.
Yeah.
But here it's like all bright, all the colors are really big. And that kind of
disco ball going the whole
time. It kind of takes some of that edgelordiness out of it.
Yeah.
And some of that nihilism out of it, even though what they're showing you is pretty nihilistic.
Yeah, this movie is really interesting in its handling of the gore and the torture, because it is a movie with a lot of torture, which is not my favorite element of the horror genre. I'm fine with it. It's just not, it doesn't compel me usually. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not really drawn by that the way some people are. The interesting thing this movie does with it, not only is like the gender flip, right, where you've got a young girl being the perpetrator. You know, she's in her like cute little pink dress and she's got her little paper crown on and is, you know, throwing salt into his wounds and doing it very gleefully and telling her daddy to like throw confetti on them and stuff. And that both changes the visuals of it and the tone of it, but it also adds that element of humor. Of like, she's so over the top and unhinged and really out there that there are really funny moments in it.
Yeah.
I do think also having that subplot, that B plot with the friend going on the date, is there kind of to cut into this a little bit, like to break up the like,
oh, definitely.
What would be otherwise like probably about 55 minutes of straight up.
Yeah, you can't do
this
that.
Kid is just getting a fork stabbed into his chest over and over again.
As humorous as it might be, that's too much.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about the humor in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes it's like really great. There are a couple scenes that are just really fun. They're still like, they can still be shocking and upsetting or whatever, but they are really funny.
Yeah.
But it also does feel weird. Like you were saying, where it feels sometimes like there are these two separate movies kind of pulling at each other and not quite clicking together in this. That's kind of how I felt about the tone.
Yeah.
It edges into camp at times.
Yep, definitely.
And then at other times, it's really sad or really upsetting or really bleak or really violent. And I'm not saying those things can't go together, but I feel like this maybe needed a couple passes still to sort of smooth things out a little bit and choose maybe when those moments happen.
Mm-hmm.
And how they flow into each other a little better. Because there were, I wish I could remember like specific examples. I think more towards, I don't remember. But even the beginning, like there even in the beginning of the movie, before all the violence starts happening, there were some scenes where I was kind of like, am I supposed to be laughing at this?
Sure, yeah.
And I'm not sure if I am.
Yeah.
And then other scenes where clearly I was supposed to be laughing at it, but I didn't necessarily think it was that funny. And I was just sort of like, I don't know, left a little puzzled at the tone at times.
Yeah, it definitely does veer into camp a little bit, but it like stops itself because the violence it's committing is never really campy. You know, like
there's like one moment, which is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, when Holly, the girlfriend, mm-hmm. is driving and Lola
listen to the dead dying dog in the back stop breathing, and then she pulls over and breaks down because the dog's dead.
When Lola throws the scrapbook at the car,
yes,
towards
yeah.
the end, yeah. and yes. then Holly has to stop the car, and she looks, and Lola ends up flinging the door open and climbing into the car, and they essentially have a cat fight.
Yeah,
in the car, and there's no music. And there's no one else on the road. They're like totally alone. And it's mm-hmm. just the sound of two teenage girls trying to beat the shit out of each other.
Yep.
And it's really funny. And it is kind of campy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, even her, you know, walking down the street, holding the book.
Yeah.
Covered in blood.
Yeah.
And
singing her little song. To
yeah.
herself.
And
yeah.
even back in the house, is where it gets kind of like, it never quite goes full camp because she is kind of campy, but the stuff that she's doing isn't.
Right.
So like there's I'm trying to think of like what a campy violent act would be. And it's like, she never like cuts his face off or, you know, you know what I mean? Like something that's like so over the top and insane
right.
or like, you know, there's no stuck in the middle with you sequence and she cuts his ear off.
Yeah.
She like they drive knives through his feet.
Right.
Not really super funny.
Right.
They carve a heart into his chest.
Yeah.
That's like the closest you get.
Right.
But even that is like is not portrayed in a way other than just like horrifying.
Well, because it's done. The actual carving is done off screen.
Yep.
With a fork.
Ugh.
And then the scene you get is them throwing salt on him.
Yeah.
And it's done more from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of in his, you know, horrified and shutting down brain because his body is going through all this trauma. He's like, his vision gets kind of weird all of that.
Even the stuff with like the drill.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like two clicks to the left and that gets like legitimately funny.
Yes.
Or like the tone at which you present or play that can very easily turn into like farcical.
Yeah. Especially when she spills the boiling water on his arm.
Yeah. But they don't do that here. It's played pretty straight that they're going to drill a hole in this guy's head.
Right. And the other thing about it is, you know, you said two clicks to the left, it becomes farcical. Two more clicks to the right, and it would have been almost like too much for me to watch.
Yes.
Because especially when they go back at it again.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's really rough.
I did appreciate that because for a second you think that he's going to somehow not get drilled through the head.
Yeah.
And then they do it.
Absolutely gets drilled through the head. Yeah.
That was the one thing that I was pretty impressed by is that I was impressed by it, but I think it leads into another semi-issue.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed with the fact that this guy is never magically saved by anything.
Mm.
And it's like, since he's the main character,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't spare him from this, them doing this horrible shit. Like, cause
yeah.
when you get to the part with the drill,
mm-hmm.
I feel like it's late enough in the movie where you're like, okay, yeah. this is a step too far.
Right.
You know? Okay. Right. They've slashed up his chest.
Yep,
sure.
Stuck knives in his feet.
Sure. Now they're going to drill a hole in his head.
Yep.
He's got to get out of this one.
Yeah.
And then not only does he get drilled in the head, but there's an extended shot from mm-hmm. behind mm-hmm. where you just see smoke.
Yeah.
Coming off the front of his face as this drill is going through his skull.
Yeah. He gets the whole drill. She drills the hole in his head initially. And then she asks her daddy to make it bigger.
Yes.
And so not only do you have to sit through it happening to him once, you have to sit through it happening to him again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That edges right up to too much for me. I think it stops just short of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was tough.
I think that the way that stuff is presented, though, in that this sort of, for lack of a better term, Lisa Frank
mm-hmm.
binder,
mm-hmm.
Is the only thing that makes that stuff not feel just completely nihilistic.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I never understood about this style of movie is mm-hmm. like, yeah, that's horrible. It'd be really bad to get needles poked into your eyes while
right,
you're still,
but right.
it's like, to what end?
Yes.
You know, other than the fact that like, wouldn't that suck? It's like, yeah, it would.
Right. Isn't it upsetting that I put the key to the contraption that it's going to kill you behind your eye?
Yeah. Well, that's just clever.
Gouge your own eye out to save yourself.
That's the worst summer camp scavenger hunt. But yeah, like there's a certain thing where it's like when it's a person tied to a chair and you're right. just doing this stuff to torture them.
Right.
You know, I think the reason that you expect them to get out of it is mm-hmm. because the alternative just feels too nihilistic. And
yeah.
I keep using that word, but yeah. I can't.
Well, it's bleak, right?
Yeah,
bleak, like
yeah.
especially when it is the main character and not like in a movie like most of the Saw entries to the Saw franchise. Typically in those movies, what happens is you kind of jump to a character and their situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they get killed, they don't escape Jigsaw's trap. You just kind of jump to the next character.
Right,
you know, it's less of a, this is the person you're following through. Or maybe you're following a group, or maybe it's moving around narratively. But in a movie like this, where it really is about Brent, it runs the risk of getting way too dark. If it is just him, like if the action of this movie was just the dad torturing him in the basement, this movie would not work.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
It would be just like, all right, that was 90 minutes of just gore and screaming. And why would I need that?
I think that's a great call because yeah. like, if you think about this movie and what it's actually doing, it's like, okay, it's about a kid.
Mm.
Who feels guilty because he was driving the car when they crashed and his dad died.
Mm.
He's dealing with this crushing guilt.
Mm.
Then he gets abducted and then he gets tortured and then eventually he escapes and that somehow releases him. Like that on paper.
Yeah.
That's just too much.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too much.
Yeah.
Weight.
It's like this kid who's already going through one of the worst things that could possibly have happened to him. Feeling responsible for killing his own parent.
Yeah.
Is now going to go through even worse.
Yes.
And let's watch it happen. So I do think that sort of kitschy element in the tone and the humor is really necessary.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's there. I just found that there were times where the movie switched a little too quickly back and forth between.
Oh, that's fair.
The
yeah.
two. And I just, again, it feels like you were saying, a festival film that's like 85% of the way there.
Yeah.
And if they'd had a little more, done a little more with it, it would have been improved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of Lola as a character?
I thought she was great.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something really fun about having an antagonist and a villain like her who is so purely unhinged.
Yes.
Where her version of reality is so divorced from our own.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she ever veers into fully sympathetic.
No.
Like, there's no... Like, if her dad was, like, a hulking monster of a man who seemed scary and overbearing and she seemed scared of him,
yeah,
you'd want to kind of forgive her and give her a little bit of a pass for the things she was doing.
She seems to be running the show.
I was going to say, yeah. But instead in this, it's kind of the reverse. Like, yeah. She's clearly learned this, all of this behavior. She's clearly learned it from the dad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's obviously something he did to the woman. I think they call her Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
This is clearly something he did to her. And
probably.
I mean, not to the same extent, but she has the scar in her forehead.
That's
and
the
she
one
is, like,
thing that I was trying to think.
Heavily lobotomized.
I was trying to think. I was like, do we think that the drilling in the head of the mother was something he did? But he is the one who's like, you gotta.
He's
teaching her how to do it.
She says, you're my first drill.
Yeah.
To Brent. So clearly. Daddy has begun this family tradition, but he definitely raised a monster, and she's kind of surpassed him in monstrousness because, you know, we don't get a sense if the father did this to anybody else, but assuming he did it to Bright Eyes,
mm-hmm.
he probably kidnapped a woman, drilled a hole in her head, messed with her brains to make her compliant, and then raped her until they had a daughter.
Yeah.
And now keeps her in the house.
Mm.
And, you know, that's horrible. You say it out loud like that. There's no humor there. But then you get Lola out of this, who not only wants to learn how to do that to find her own partner, she's also carving her initials on their chest and mm-hmm. making scrapbooks where she makes fun of them and trying to humiliate them and make them cry because it's clearly like a sexual thrill for her. So she has gone way past where her dad was, and he kind of is this, like, I don't know, like, I don't really know how to describe the dad. My words are failing me now, but he's kind of wimpy, right? Like,
yeah, I feel like he's definitely... He has been overtaken.
Yes.
Like, whatever. I mean, not that. I think there's something interesting there, too, in that. I'm going to say this kind of activity, but this is not really something that anybody does. The stuff you see in this movie.
I hope not.
This type of activity, this height, whatever this is heightened from, is usually power based, right? And if you have basically built Frankenstein's monster here,
yeah,
and then the monster overtakes you,
yep,
he doesn't have any choice now. Like, she's gonna fuck him up if he starts talking back to her. So it's definitely, I can definitely see there being a dynamic shift.
Oh yeah,
where
she becomes the dominant personality.
Yeah,
I
guess what I was trying to say there is, like, the people who do this kind of thing, again, heightened, are not generally strong, confident people to begin with. Like, they do it because they feel that lack, and that they're trying to overcompensate for whatever they feel the world is.
Yeah, they feel powerless.
Yeah.
And this is a way of asserting their power.
Yeah.
I also think...
And when you take that away from them and you turn the gun on them,
mm-hmm.
then that goes right out the window.
Yeah, they crumble like a bunch of building, like kids' building blocks, yeah.
Like in Death Proof, when the girls finally go after him
and
he just starts,
like,
screaming
crying,
like a baby.
And he becomes like a snotty baby,
yeah.
In this also, the incest question definitely adds to that, because the dad and Lola, I mean, clearly fucked up.
Oh yeah,
in so many ways. And then you're left with this sort of, like, I would argue the incest urges go both ways.
Probably, yeah.
In this, I mean, there's a couple times where you see things from the dad's perspective, and he's clearly, like, the camera gaze becomes a romantic gaze, not a familial one. And Lola straight up says it. And so I think there is a little bit of that power dynamic between them shifting because of that too, because in his very fucked up conception of the world, he is in love with her. He doesn't just love her, he's in love with her.
Sure.
And so he wants to give her what she wants. It's kind of taking that like princess thing and cranking that way up to 11. But no, I mean, I think Lola's a great villain.
Yeah.
Like she's kind of naturally terrifying because she's in a package you would not expect to be this crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't expect her to be this violent. Like she gets pretty physically violent in a way. Like she has her dad do a lot of it, but it's clear that like she is capable of doing serious harm to people. And
for all the things we've talked about, we didn't even mention how she forces him to pee into a jar.
Yeah.
Or he dad's going to nail his dick to the chair.
And then she threatens to bite his penis off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she's clearly, and then she kills Bright Eyes, who is her mother.
Right.
She suffocates her. So yeah, I mean, Lola is, and all the trappings, right? All the teenage girl trappings, the dolls and the kind of like little girl stuff mixed with the very sexualized stuff makes her like a really complicated and kind of intriguing villain to watch. Like she's fun to watch because she's so crazy.
Do you ever watch Big Mouth?
A couple seasons of it. Yeah.
It's funny that her name is Lola.
Oh,
because as I was watching it, I was thinking, this feels like the character Lola from Big Mouth.
It does,
like,
you're right.
As a grown up.
Yeah.
I think she's really good. I think the performance is great. I think, again, it's like, as far as whether or not the tone is completely dialed in, I think she rides the line really, really well.
Yes.
Between being like you can't have a character like this that isn't by definition kind of over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
But she never takes it into like supervillain territory.
Right.
The levels are just peaking.
Yes.
Like she never goes through the roof with it.
Yeah,
It's really, really effective.
No, I think she does a really great job with the character and with the part. Yeah.
So, let's talk about this subplot.
Yes.
Because, it's basically like a teenage high school. It feels like a big budget student film or something because it's so much about, all it is the main guy's Brent's friend.
Yes.
And he gets a date with this girl he wants to go to the prom with,
who I think's named Mia.
Yeah. And then like I would say 40 to 50% of the subplot is them just getting shit faced in a car.
Yep.
And then, you know, after that they go to the thing and they get thrown out of the thing and they have sex in the car. Mm-hmm. Like clearly she's fucked up.
Yeah.
And as we said before, the only real payoff to any of this is that her brother, who has been missing, is one of the previous victims of Lola.
Right.
And I don't know, like I feel like this stuff works in the movie that doesn't have the crazy shit in it.
Yeah.
Like in those two different movies that we were talking about, I think it works fine as like teenage drama stuff.
Yeah.
But it just has nothing to do with anything else except for that one tie up at the end.
And it makes some of this is also where I think some of the tone in this movie doesn't quite work, is on that B plot of like Mia and what's his face's date and the prom, because some of it is kind of lightly played for laughs or like is even supposed to be sort of like edgy humor on a couple things. Like he says something like, well, I don't want you to think I have a hygiene problem. And she's like, what do you think? I'm going to suck your dick.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be like, oh shit, you know? And then when they're dancing in the prom, she's like feeling him up. And that's why they get thrown out is that she's being like really sexually aggressive and inappropriate. And all the other kids are like staring at them on the dance floor. And a couple of the guys give him the like nice head nod. And yeah, you're supposed to kind of laugh at it, but also the whole time you're watching it, you're like, oh, there's something really wrong with this girl. Mm-hmm. Like this behavior is like very much crying out for help. And so it's kind of this weird tension of like, I don't think any of this is funny.
Yeah.
It's just sad. It's just sad to watch like a teenage girl kind of implode in this way because she's had this really tragic, traumatic thing happen in her family. And then the like friend seems like he's actually kind of a sweet guy who like actually thinks like, wow, she's so hot and she's so cool. And then he clearly is like way out of his depth and doesn't really know what to do with her. And it just feels sad. And then, like you were saying, the payoff is supposedly that we find out that her brother is one of the prior victims. But, and then her dad is the off-duty cop who goes and gets to the house and helps in some way to get Brent free. But then he just gets killed.
Yeah.
So then you're just more sad for her.
Right. That's all I could think about after that.
Damn, her brother went missing and now her dad's been murdered.
Yeah.
And she's probably never fully going to know what happened.
Because Brent can't tell her.
No. He doesn't have a voice. Maybe he can write it down one day, but.
Yeah. I guess his hands are kind of okay.
Kind of? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels just, yeah, like a weird choice to keep all that in there and not focus more a little bit maybe on Holly and the mom trying to find him.
Yeah.
But it's also tough because one of our big complaints tends to be that we don't like cop plots.
Yeah.
And having the B plot be prom plot instead of cop plot.
Not much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I was trying to figure out where that was all going.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we had finally gotten to a point where it was crossing over.
Yeah.
But the crossing over was so ludicrous that I was like, okay, sure, whatever. Because so much of this movie up to this point had been, okay, sure, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But even there, they end up basically doing the Silence of the Lambs bit.
Yes.
Because they drive up and they park, and you are led to believe that they just park in front of Lola's house.
Right.
And then they start having sex in the car, mm-hmm. and then they're doing the whole thing where Lola's dad comes out. You think he's coming up to the thing, somebody knocks on the thing.
Right.
And it's the principal of the school,
mm-hmm.
and that's happening in a completely different place from this other thing.
Right.
Which again made me go, what the hell was the point of that?
Yeah, it was just a fake out.
Yeah.
Yeah. This might be jumping a little bit. I know you even said to me, like, we have forgiven much more than this in different movies. But I was bothered in this movie about just how neat and tidy all of these little ties are.
Yeah.
That it, you know, Lola's habit of torturing boys is what led Brent to feeling like he killed his dad. And then Mia's brother is one of those boys, and she ends up going to prom with the friend. And then her dad just so happens to be a cop who's going to get involved because Holly calls or something.
Yeah, I was a little confused, or at least the convenience light was going off.
Yeah,
because they, like, you never got the sense that Mia was friends with anybody else.
Right.
But I think either Holly or Brent's mom calls him, calls her dad.
Right.
And so that was like, well, is there only one cop in town? I mean, that explains a lot.
Right.
Why they never caught this person.
The cop.
It's because there's only one person.
Right.
One
cop. And then there's the other thing of, you know, it would have been somewhat plausible if over the course of Lola's life, she was getting her dad to kidnap boys that she could like test him out as a boyfriend. And when she decided she didn't want him anymore, they would kill him and get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of dress that up to make it look like an accident or make it look like an animal attack or, you know what I mean? Like there's a bunch.
Australia does have those animals that carve hearts into your chest when they kill you.
Probably, yeah. But I mean, like, earlier on, like, before she had refined her little ritual, like, with some of the earlier boys, like, there would have been ways that it was, like, if it was, like, we're just straight up killing them, and we're burying them, and then even if their remains are found much later, decomposition has taken care of most of the evidence, and people are just like, oh, no, how sad. Instead, they have been disappearing boys.
Yes.
And hiding them in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then one boy escapes to cause the car accident. Where does he go?
Right. Yeah.
What happens to him? Like, it's just like there's like one too many convenient connections to keep this all like a neat little package.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. Yeah.
I almost wish that Brent's dad's death had nothing to do with Lola.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That he just had died, maybe not even in a car accident, like maybe like in some, maybe in a similar way, but like I almost wish it was just separate from that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that stuff that when I said before how I was impressed that, you know, they went so far with what they were doing to him, but some of it bothered me.
Yeah.
The reason it bothered me is because they really press on the boundaries of plausibility.
Yeah.
With a lot of stuff, whether it's what they do to Brent or this world that they've created because it's so small.
Yeah.
Because like, that was my first thought was, well, how have they never caught these people?
Right.
Like there's no indication that Lola is new to the area or anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not like when he finally tells Holly who asked him to the prom.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, oh, the new girl.
Right. Right.
So they've been there.
Yes.
They've been doing this for multiple years.
Yes. There's a minimum of four boys.
Yes.
She's only 18.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty high ratio.
Yeah. It seems like it seemed like based on the scrapbook, it had gone back. She'd been doing it since she was like a kid.
Yeah.
So let's say 10 years.
Right.
But still, assuming that this is even a moderately sized town.
Right. Every 2 years, a boy goes missing.
Yeah.
And is never seen again.
Yeah. And then there's one who escapes.
Yep.
Who doesn't look like he's running anywhere.
No.
And if he is the inadvertent cause of this car crash, you would think that the people who get to the car crash would probably find this young boy with the heart carved into his chest.
Yes.
And maybe try to put some pieces together. It's just the
because you think like Brent comes out of it, it looks fairly unscathed. It's only been 6 months since the car accident. He has no scars. He has no physical scars.
Right. Yes.
Well,
not any scars he didn't cause on his own.
Right. I meant from the car
crash.
With
his sexy self-harm.
But you'd think he'd come out of the car accident having said, you know, when they get asked what happened, he would say, there was a bloodied man standing in the middle of the road.
Right, yeah.
I don't know where he went, but you guys should look for him.
Even later in the movie, they try to tie that up like ever so slightly by having Lola say like, oh, one of them got away.
Right.
He's probably dead.
Right, right. Yeah.
And okay, if he's dead, he's not there.
Right.
So I assume someone probably found that body.
Right. Yeah, yeah. He didn't seem like he was going to go dig himself a grave and cover himself over. It's just a little too neat and tidy.
Yeah. And for me, the fact that these people, Lola and her father, et cetera, actively exist in society and not like on the outskirts.
Right.
Is just a little too hard for me to square.
Yeah. Even when Lola does invite Brent to the prom and he turns her down, he's not like... Like, there's no point at which he's like, yeah, oh, the weird girl.
Right.
You know?
I took that, like, well, first of all, she presents as weird. But, but like, when he finally, the fact that he won't tell Holly who asked him.
Yeah.
And when he finally, like, that kind of said to me, like, okay, I feel like this is the weird girl.
Yeah.
But even still, I forgot what you said.
But I would have kind of bought it even a little bit more if, say, when Brent and Holly were having their like sexy little joking time and she kept being like, who was it? Who was it? Who asked you to the prom? And he wouldn't say. If Holly was like, was it Lola?
Mm.
like, you acting like this, and I've caught her looking at you. We all know she gets like real boy crazy. Was it Lola?
And then those boys disappear.
And then those boys disappear. But that would be the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So we don't have to keep harping on this, but it just does. In a movie where everything is so small and it is a pretty stripped down movie for all that happens in it, all of these very convenient coincidences start to feel a little bit like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Right. It's an interesting narrative cone of vision movie.
Yes.
Because I do think a lot of this stuff is widening the circle too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they just choose not to address it, which is
right.
Obvious. You can do that.
Yeah. But, I will say I'm glad they don't go too deep into the family origin story.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm glad they give you the little hints there that the father has done to Bright Eyes, what he has now taught Lola to do to the boys.
Yeah.
Like, there's evidence there, but they don't ever straight up say it. I'm glad that, like, Lola has her little scrapbook and she kind of goes through the boys, but she's not like, this is when I was in third grade and he said this, and then because he did this, I didn't like him, so I had daddy throw him in the cellar. She just sort of blithely moves through things, and we don't need all the like, well, how come the dad was like this? Did he do it to other people? Like, we don't really need it. We just kind of stick with what we're given in front of us.
Yeah, I think they do a great job with the family and giving you just enough of those people for you to get it, but also wonder about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the wondering is not something that needs to be explained.
Yeah,
I think it's like you can kind of see a lot of influences in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is clearly Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Because that the whole thing at the house feels like a teenage Texas Chainsaw kind of.
Yeah.
And they kind of handle it the same way, where it's the, you know, the Sawyer family exists.
Mm-hmm.
You see them and how they act.
Yep, but it's clearly an inherited set of behaviors
right.
that each subsequent generation is tweaking a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I wonder about is how do you get a basement that high?
That basement was huge.
Yeah.
And
the ceilings of that basement were like three times the ceilings of the house.
Yes. Looking at the house from the outside, it does not look like a house that maybe would have a basement at all.
Right, right. You
know? Let alone one that's like 25-foot ceilings.
How did they explain when they were having that house built?
Yeah.
I need you to excavate one full city building size story down so I can build my cellar.
Yeah. Like, how did they pour the concrete without anybody being like, this is a big old cellar.
You don't want stairs? No stairs? What about windows? No windows. Minimal ventilation? Soundproofing, huh?
I'd say this cellar's about five dead boys high.
Yeah.
You really need a cellar that big?
Maybe three dead boys and one dead adult man.
You know, the city code is only 2.5 dead boys.
Yeah.
Anything higher is just really unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I enjoy the corpse ladder that he gets out of there with.
Yes.
Yeah, again, it's just like the amount of damage done to him. If he got out, I mean, I guess you could say adrenaline is a hell of a drug.
I wish they didn't do the feet knives. Like, as funny as knife and foot disease is as a joke, and I will give you that one.
Oh, yeah.
It does make
it's good to be back.
It makes the subsequent levels of action from Brent.
Yes.
Start to feel really like, okay.
If they had him scream like a banshee anytime he hit the gas pedal, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, that's true. That too.
But he can't because he's...
Well, even just do his little like horse shriek that he's been left with. Oh, shit. There was something else I was going to say, but I lost it. Oh, how do you feel about the reveal of the Basement Boys? Did that feel like a twist to you? Did that feel... Were you surprised?
I wasn't surprised, but I didn't expect it, if that makes sense.
Because
I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
And as soon as they opened the thing in the floor, I was like, oh, yeah, the boys are down there.
Yeah.
But like until they did that, I didn't even think about the fact that they might still be on the property.
Yeah, I mean, the hint early on that I did not catch was that he picks up the roadkill.
Yes, yeah.
At first I was like, oh, so he's just weird and gross. That's That
yeah, I yeah. You know, the fact that they were eating chicken.
Right.
Surprised
me. If this family eats roadkill, I would not be shocked.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I thought the Basement Boys was a good addition.
Yeah. You'd buy tickets again to their show.
the lights alone.
Yeah.
Stuff that they do with lasers is incredible. Yeah, I think, you know, it's... I wish this was tighter on the edges.
Yeah.
Because I think so much of it is actually really well structured and thought out.
Yeah, and I think it's well acted.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Like, I think the performances in it were great. I think it looks really good. Like, most of the movie, like, it's a little uneven in terms of visuals, but there are some shots in this where I was like, wow, that looks great.
Yeah, I was so when we first started, I first started the movie, I got really worried because the first couple shots seemed like they had that cheap video camera look that I hate to it. But once things got going, it was like, okay, this is just like that mid-2000s high contrast look. Okay, fine.
Right. And this is a low budget indie film.
Yeah. So. And it didn't have that look to it, like the shitty video look that I hate. And also the music cues that they used were good enough where I was like, oh, this cost money.
Right.
And this is like a deep cut, interesting song.
Yeah. And the person who put this together is clearly like trying to put things together in like a visually and auditorily interesting way.
Yeah. They couldn't afford Metallica songs, but they could afford like a 70s easy listening song in the beginning. Yeah. I think this guy, Sean Byrne, he's made a few movies since. There's one that I actually kind of want to watch now because it pops up constantly. Anytime Arrow Video has a sale, one of the movies that is always up there is a movie called The Devil's Candy.
Yeah, I've heard of this
one. I've just never paid any attention to it, but it's the movie he makes after this.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, now I kind of want to see it.
Yeah.
And the most recent movie he did was, I think it's called Dangerous Creatures. Is that right?
Maybe.
It came out recently. It looks like a shark movie, but it's really like
it's that one.
The real shark is the guy driving the boat. Yeah.
The real sharks were the ones we made along the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dangerous Animals, excuse me.
Yeah.
Which I heard was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see that. I am happy to say I based on my very limited knowledge of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this was at the number 8 spot.
Mm-hmm.
I was very cynical going into this.
Yeah.
And I was very willing to come out being like, that was a piece of shit.
Yeah, same.
I am more than happy to say it is not. Yep. And I think that it was made by a guy who knows what he's doing.
Yep.
And I'm interested to see the stuff that he does next.
I will say, I really wish this was not in the number 8 spot. I think putting it there as an introduction to it does it a disservice.
Oh, big time.
Because if I came to this movie the way most people who love it on the internet do, which is they just sort of found it or somebody recommended it or they read something about it and it sounded interesting. So they decided, what the hell? I'll give it a shot. If that's how I came to this movie, I would have been like, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
That movie was great. I was really impressed. My expectations were so low, and then they blew my expectations out of the water. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like excited to have found this little indie movie that did not get the attention it deserved at the time it came out.
This definitely, I feel like this is could run parallel to the way that I found Starry Eyes.
Yeah.
Like very similar thing where it's like if Starry Eyes was number 8 on this list, I'd be like, it was okay.
Exactly. It kind of puts it on the wrong scale.
Yeah.
You know, when you're putting this up against things like Alien, that's unfair to this movie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I came away feeling about, you know, not to jump straight into our conversation about placement, but that's the takeaway for me at the end after watching this movie was it bummed me out to have it be presented as, yes, the 8th best horror movie of all time.
Right.
And then watch it and be like, I would have been really excited to find this.
Yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because I think if this was number... So first of all, I was intrigued because I had heard of this, but not very widely. So the fact that it was on the list at all intrigued me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is worth checking out.
Yeah.
But for me, when they bumped it to 8, I was like, what are we doing here? But I think it's a double-edged sword because, like, on the one hand, like you're saying, if you go into this thinking, oh, this is the number 8 best horror movie of all time, according to this list, you're going to be let down.
Yes.
However, I could also see someone pulling up this list, God forbid, and going through and being like, oh, what's this movie at number 8 I've never heard of? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like I feel like if this was back in the placement that it was before, which I want to say was like somewhere in the second half of the list.
Yeah,
yeah. In my very crowded second half of this list. I think I don't know if I would put it on the list at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was going to that back half, like somewhere, I would put this somewhere that, like I was saying, is in is high enough to be intriguing.
Yeah.
But not so high to be as to be unbelievable.
Right.
So like 128, you know?
Yeah.
I've said my piece.
Very good. meeting adjourned.
What about yourself?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if this had been, you know, if you told me this was like 140 on the list, I would have been like, oh, okay, all right. Yeah, let's give it a shot. Sounds like it could be good. And then would have been probably pleasantly surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, wait a minute, this is number 8. And then you watch it and you're like, well, I mean, it's good, but it's not. Like, again, you start comparing it to the things we typically compare other movies to on this list. And you're sort of like, I don't know, man.
It's a very high bar to clear.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I would put this one on the list, to be honest.
If this was 200, if this was the Rotten Tomatoes list of 200 great horror movies in no particular order, fine.
Sure.
But the fact that they say it's the best horror movies of all time.
Yes. Yeah. Again, we are quibbling more with the nature of the list than the movies themselves.
Yes.
If someone told me this is on my top two, this is on their personal top 200 horror movies of all time, was this movie, I'd be like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you liked it so much. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is if this can be number 8, Starry Eyes should be like somewhere in the top 20. I don't know. Come on, guys. Anyway. I think that's going to do it for, what's this movie called?
The Loved Ones.
The Loved Ones. Yeah. Glad we watched it.
Yeah. Would recommend.
Would, yeah.
Yeah. If you can stomach the torture stuff and you know, you've got 85 minutes because that's how long it is.
If you get time to kill between funerals or something and you just want something to watch.
Funerals.
I don't know.
How many people?
I don't know what people do.
How many people do you know that are dying?
Well, more and more every day. Unfortunately for us all.
Can't keep them all alive in the basement.
No. Where am I? What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Okay, we're done with this movie.
Yes.
So I'm not going to hit the randomizer button because we had a special request from one of our listeners. Mm-hmm. Now don't start thinking you can just start requesting stuff.
No.
It's a very particular listener.
Well, first
who
of
has
all,
a very terrifying mother.
Yeah.
So we have to do it.
Or we will find ourselves locked in a basement.
Yeah.
Being fed a dead marsupial from the side of the road. Yeah.
Would not surprise me if she had some basement boys in her future.
Probably. But we also have to do Final Destination.
We do.
Yeah.
So we are going to, the next two episodes, we're going to do, first we're going to do Death Becomes Her, which is our requested episode.
Yes.
And then after that, in time, hopefully, for the April Patreon, we're going to do Final Destination 1. And if, as soon as we finish, I look at the calendar and realize I have to switch those, we'll be doing Final Destination first, and then Death Becomes Her. But that's what's coming up.
Stay tuned for Clay to re-edit this episode.
Oh, no. There'll be no re-editing. There'll be no extra work done. What are you kidding me? All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. If you want to help support the show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. And thank you for listening. Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks, Clay.
We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.